This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 8th of June, 2021. And we're looking at a session that's so boring that, actually you did post a chart of the NASDAQ 100, Peter. I wasn't inspired to do so. Not a whole lot to talk about relative to yesterday. Very, very low energy in the market yesterday, and we have no earnings really to speak of, except a huge development that certainly sparked a fire under at least one stock, and that was Biogen, with this news of their Alzheimer's drug to be called Aduhelm. Approval by the FDA, this inspired a 38% rally in the stock. It's a really interesting story. I actually want to dig into a couple of details here with you, Peter, and pretend I know something. What's your take on that and the broader market here?
Yeah, so if we start with the broader market, as you can see on slide two, I mean, I did post the NASDAQ 100 chart anyway, John. I know it was a low energy session, but we crept above that 13,800 level, and we extended on yesterday's massive rally where we took out the recent resistance levels from last week. And as you can see in the small insert, our theme baskets, the next generation medicine pocket was really lifted by this Biogen news, and bubble stocks also got a little bit of a spillover effect there, up 1.3%, and e-commerce after that. So there is clearly the Biogen effect spilling into a lot of different growth pockets in the market, and it didn't help as well that we have the U.S. It did help as well that we have the U.S. 10-year yield at 1.55%. But jumping to the Biogen story, John, because you're right, it's the first approval on this disease from the FDA since 2003, as you can see there from the small insert from Bloomberg News. It's on slide three. But there's a lot of controversy over this, or not all scientists think that this drug has the potential that it's you know, the company hopes it has, and it's got an accelerated approval program. Sorry, it got the approval under the accelerated approval program from the FDA. And as you can see here, I highlighted in red that it's that you get that if you have a surrogate endpoint, which is basically a marker from a laboratory or some other things where you have an indication that it most likely will continue to show in wider clinical trials that it's that it actually has the benefits that that you assume. And that means that this company, so that Biogen will have to do a phase four confirmatory trial to get the full traditional approval from the FDA. So I think there's still uncertainty around this. And John, you mentioned on the internal call this idea about that this drug is targeting a specific thing in the brain, right?
Yeah, I mean, the reason they've been approved it apparently is that it is shown, although the clinical trials essentially failed in terms of showing really conclusive evidence of improvement in patients. There was some improvement, and from what I understand, in these trials, but the thing that was shown in sort of empirical terms was that it did reduce this so-called beta amyloid protein, which is very prevalent and prominent in the issues, the physiological manifestation of Alzheimer's in the brain. And that was the reason it was approved. And then the other aspect of this is that they want to charge $56,000 per year for this drug for a single patient. And with this odd setup with Medicare not being able to negotiate drug prices with drug companies, the drug company can essentially just name its own price. And there are an awful lot of people that could be the target audience for this drug. You can't even fathom the numbers that would be involved here for what this would cost. And it's inconclusive. So I just think this opens up for an interesting political debate, especially for drug companies. The irony here could be that this ends up resulting or fast tracking the whole negotiation process or a new negotiation process where the Medicare has to actually negotiate drug prices or is allowed to negotiate drug prices with drug companies.
Good points.
All right. Let's not talk too much about that. I actually want to skip briefly to, and we're going to jump around a little bit here, but I think it's interesting to talk about what's moving. Biogen, of course, was one of those things. The other thing that's moving is Bitcoin, really into a new, pretty vicious sell-off phase here. And on slide four, I just want to talk up a couple of technical levels. I don't want to draw dots if that's not justified, but it's kind of interesting that this is happening at a time when U.S. authorities were out saying that they were able to seize most of the Bitcoin involved in the transaction to pay for that ransomware attack on the Colonial Pipeline. I don't know if that's kind of spooked the market, especially some of the dodgy operators in the market. Regardless, a sell-off is unfolding here. And as you can see on slide four, I put the little daily chart on the left. We sort of broke through all the little triangular consolidation type lines a couple days ago. And now we're breaking through some key flatline levels. So the lowest daily close around 33,000. And that means we're eyeing the 30K level, which was the low on that vicious sell-off in May. 27.2, which you can see on the weekly chart there on the right, where I did the Fibonacci retracement. Unbelievably, the 61.8% retracement is not until 27,200 because this is a logarithmic chart, so it's a bit confusing, but that's where that is. And then I think the 20K chart is getting pretty existential, or sorry, 20K level. That was near the highs in that prior major top posted in late 2017 that held all the way until late 2020. So interesting to see if this becomes just another dip or something that on a more existential level for Bitcoin specifically, which is suffering worse than the second largest currency, cryptocurrency, Ethereum. Yeah, and then let's turn over to treasuries now, because we're not really getting much of a signal in the treasuries market. We're towards the lows of the cycle, despite all the inflation talk. We've talked about some of the probable contributing factors to that, including the excess liquidity in the U.S. banking system, which is being offloaded into treasuries, the fact that the Treasury still needs to unwind its general account at the Fed by another $300 billion, taking it down to $500 billion by August 1st. Are we just going to have to sit on our hands, you think, for signals from the rates market? Or do you think outside of this, of course, the FOMC, it could move the needle, but the market even remains reactive to data here this week from the U.S.?
Well, absolutely, John. The thing is that the big question here is what is going to be the direction of U.S. Treasuries in the long term and in the short term, whether they're going to break the tight range bound that they've been trading in the past couple of months, whether on the downside or the upside. But that I think that the bigger probability is that for them to continue to rise and break above 1.7%. However, it is very difficult at this moment in time to understand when that will happen, because it looks like the market is more reactive to tapering fears than to any other data that we are going to get from the United States. So yes, definitely this week we have the CPI numbers coming out. My focus is going to be on the monthly data, because obviously the yearly data is going to show a very high number due to the debasement we had the past year. But the monthly data, if they surprise on the upside, there is nothing to indicate that they might be temporary, as the Federal Reserve wish them to be. And also before these inflation numbers, I want to remind that we have some important auctions to have. Today we are going to start with 3 years U.S. Treasuries. Tomorrow we have the 10 years U.S. Treasury auction, and on Thursday, the 30-year U.S. Treasury auction. But you said something, John, before that is very important, and is this about this unprecedented liquidity that we see in the money market. And today's focus for me is going to see if we see any of this liquidity leaking in the 3 years U.S. Treasuries demand, because obviously it will pave the way for a strong 10 and 30 years U.S. Treasury auction.
Yeah, and there's also the reverse repo facility we've talked about. That's another sort of side effect of all this liquidity. And there's been headlines talking about the record growth in this facility to almost $500 billion now. And now we have the end of quarter effect coming into play probably at the end of this month, because we've those rules that sort of suspended all that activity to reduce bank balance sheets into quarter end. The pandemic rules suspending that are now back into effect. So I think it's going to be, we're going to have a hard time getting real pricing, in other words, from the Treasury market until July 1st at minimum, and possibly not until August 1st because of the Treasury general account. But it's going to be very interesting nonetheless if we get a crazy US CPI print to see what the reactivity is there. You've also got to focus on EU yields and real yields rising a little bit here. So the nominal yields rising a bit faster than inflation expectations. It's still pretty sluggish stuff, and we're kind of bogged down here a bit for yields. We have an ECB meeting up this week and some auctions. Do you think we put in some resistance for EU treasuries and start seeing yields heading back higher?
Well, right now, John, I think that in order to see European sovereign yields pointing higher, we need to have either the ECB talking about tapering or US Treasury yields going higher. If none of the two is going to happen, I think that we will see European sovereign yields trading range bound exactly as US yields are doing. However, there might be some short-term opportunities for bond investors out there. And this is what I'm trying to say with slide number 5. So in blue, you see the blended average European sovereign yields weighted by countryside. And as you can see, since let's say April until now, yields have been rising faster than inflation expectations. So basically what he's telling us is that investors have been pricing a tapering ahead of us and might be more aggressive than what they should be. So if the ECB is going to sound dovish this week meeting, there might be some upside for European sovereigns. Ahead of the ECB meeting, I'm going to watch German bunds auction, especially the one of today and the one of tomorrow. It's today the German finance agency is going to come out with a 7-year bond sales, and I'm sure John, you remember about the disastrous 15 years bond sales that we had around 10 days ago. So I want to see if there is any weakness there and also at tomorrow's 30-year bond auction.
Interesting stuff. Also with the ECB message, and then later on we'll have the Centra conference, sort of the ECB's version of Jackson Hole. And then we have a need to remind folks coming up tonight, and speaking of inflation and inflation expectations, that the Chinese PPI, considered one of the key global metrics of inflationary pressures, is going to be out and in Asian hours and expected to show a new cycle high, a new high since the very brief spike above and close to 10% back in 2008, expected at 8.4%. Of course, the key will be if that's going to be transitory, if oil prices, I think, will need to continue their rise for this measure to continue to stay at these levels. You can see that on slide 7. You can see the CPI as well. So that's looked a pretty, interesting picture for producers in China if the prices they're receiving for the output is not rising as fast as their input costs. And then I don't want to spend too much time on FX, but Yuan-Oki is kind of interesting. It looks like it may be breaking back down. It's back below 10.10. I think with oil prices where they are, with risk sentiment where it is in Europe, bit surprised we haven't seen more progress lower in Yuan-Oki and a solid and sustained break of 10. We have a region survey out of Norway today, so it'd be interesting to watch if that's getting any traction as well. And then briefly on slide 9, the trend overview, everything is almost flatlining, no signs of life, but I'm just really curious what's going to happen to sterling here. It's lost all momentum to the upside versus the euro. And there's a story Bloomberg is running that I tweeted out talking about the EU threatening retaliatory pressure measures on Northern Ireland over the border and customs check. There's been some violent protests in Northern Ireland. Situation is not looking good. And a reminder of the difficulties in customs terms from this, the severance of their former union under the within the EU, et cetera. Peter, you have a focus on European car makers, where we saw that crazy rally, especially in the likes of Volkswagen, et cetera. Just a massive reassessment of their potential, I guess, at least, or their equity price. What's your take here? I see you have a chart here on slide 10.
Yeah, I'm talking about carmakers today because, of, as you say, that you have this massive repricing. You can see here on slide 10, this is the Euro Stoxx automobile and parts index on a total return basis, so in euro. And as you can see, we're up more than 100% from the lows. And it's been really turbocharged this year with a huge repricing of car makers due to introductions of aggressive path towards more electric vehicles from Daimler, BMW, Volkswagen, etc. Other car makers like Renault is also doing a great job on rolling out electric vehicles. And the latest numbers we've got from Europe is that Volkswagen is actually leading in many key markets over Tesla. Tesla is really losing ground, and they're also losing ground in China. We talked about it on Friday, you and I, John, that Tesla was looking very weak technically. And the surprising fact is, I think it would have been a very interesting week, this one, if we had got a very, very, very strong non-farm payrolls, because that could have set in motion, the right mix of things with high interest rates, etc., and could have taken Tesla to a close below 550. And then this week would have been very different. I think what's going on in general in the car industry is, as you can see, it's trading at a 10 times forward earnings per share. It's a very cyclical industry. It typically don't trade at very high valuation metrics. And I think this is the key concern here, that people is getting too energized about electrical vehicles in the future and what it means for margins. The market is definitely saying that margins will be better for in the future for car makers on this new type of car compared to the old internal combustion engine. That could be very well true, but it's still a very tough game. It's still a volume game. And I still think the jury is out how much more profitable and what the return on investment will be. But this is definitely where the momentum is. I just want to highlight it. It's if you want some action, it's definitely the car makers. But there is this key concern. If Tesla breaks down, it could take the entire car industry down with it. So I think that when we get to the Q2 earnings, which is in July and in the quiet summer months, I think we're in for a potential shakeup of the car industry. But that's something we'll discuss more when we get closer to those earnings releases.
Yes. And then on the macro calendar, I do not have the treasury auctions that I should have in there that Althea mentioned. So do remember those auctions she highlighted this week. And we have a couple of interesting data points. So the April U.S. trade balance, I think it's interesting to see how the trade balance shapes up the next few months as we see maybe a switch of the consumption basket a bit more towards services and less towards this incredible explosion of demand for goods. As some of the stimulus check effect fades, but also as with opening up, people are spending more on services, going out to restaurants, et cetera. And then we have the Chinese PPI overnight, key one, a bunch of little bits and pieces for different currencies. So have a look at that, depending on what you're trading. ECB Thursday, we previewed that. And then the May CPI, I think that's the critical last data point ahead of next Wednesday's June 16th FOMC meeting. For today, that is a wrap. And we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.